Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for a Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen talk radio show. My guest for this morning is Mallory Kasdan. She is a writer and voice actor. She writes about parenting and culture and does voiceovers for television and radio. Mallory and I will be discussing her debut children's picture book, Ella. Good morning, Mallory. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen talk radio. How are you doing this morning?
Doing great, Johnny. How are you doing?
Fantastic. It is a pleasure to have you on the air with me. Ella is a fun and entertaining read. The illustrations are beautiful and wonderfully done. Congratulations on your accomplishments.
Thank you. It's really fun. It's a fun one.
Let us start by getting to know you a little better. Please give us a quick walkthrough of your life from childhood to the present moment.
Okay. So I grew up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And I'm the oldest of three girls. I have two sisters who are younger than me. And I had a very good childhood, I think, I would say. Happy childhood. In terms of shaping my current situation, I went to kind of a really interesting elementary school that was very, it was like a laboratory school for the University of Pittsburgh. So it was really a creative place, and I credit that school with a lot of its very progressive ways of teaching with some of my the way that my career has kind of played out. I was always encouraged to nurture my love of writing, and I was always a huge reader, and I had a couple of great teachers who were really influential in shaping my love of the written word. So I always was interested in books. I always had my nose in a book, and it's funny because now my daughter is the same way, and I'm always kind of trying to get her to stop spacing out, and my mom used to do the same to me. I'd sneak books at dinner. So I had a very lovely childhood, and then I went to college in Vermont, which was really beautiful and really a wonderful time of my life, and I studied English literature, and I studied media studies in college, mm-hmm. And I had a lot of fun as well. It just was a really fun time, which you don't know when you're in college how fun it is, but it was pretty fun. And then post-college, I moved to New York City right away. I kind of knew mm-hmm. that I wanted to be here. Everything I was interested in seemed to be centered here. I thought initially I wanted to work in television. I used to love David Letterman. I still do love David Letterman so much, and I thought my only goal in life would be to work on his show and be one of his pages. That was mm-hmm. all I could think of I wanted to do after college. but I did not get a job working at David Letterman's show as one of his pages, but I did get a job working in book publishing as a publicity assistant. So I worked for a big publisher, Hyperion, and it was a really great first job. I worked for this wonderful woman. She was a publicist. I was her assistant. She was pretty awesome. She taught me a lot about the industry. I got mm-hmm. to do a lot of really cool things and learn a lot in my first job. And so I stayed in book publishing for a bit, went to another company, actually to Penguin, who is now my publisher for my children's book. Mm-hmm. So that's really interesting. And then I left publishing after that. And this is going to bleed into some of the other questions, but I left publishing after that. I went into, I started to do voiceovers for commercials, did that for a little while. Then I started doing some stuff for radio, started writing and producing radio stories also. I was always writing, I was always writing essays. I was always sort of had that as a piece of my life. I wasn't doing it necessarily as to get as I wasn't getting paid necessarily, but I was always working. I was doing that, and then I had a couple of kids in there somewhere, and I got married prior to that, had a couple of kids, and continued to sort of work and try to be a mom at the same time, which is great, but also challenging sometimes. And then kind of just came full circle back to my kids kind of inspiring this particular idea. I had never really thought that I was going to write a children's book, but the idea came to me, and it seemed to be the right moment and the right idea to have my kids and their interests kind of like inspire mine. So that's me. I've been living in Brooklyn for almost 15 years, and in New York City for 20. So that's my life pretty much up until the present moment.
When you were growing up, who were some of your favorite authors, and what were some of your favorite children's books?
Well, books that I really always remember, first of all, I loved Where the Wild Things Are. That was kind of just a really, it was a little scary. It was a little, more masculine than some of the other, books that are traditionally associated with little girls. But I remember just relating to it so much, and in terms of it just being so imaginative, and this child just goes off into his own brain, basically, and has like an experience because he's having a moment, he's having trouble. And that book was really resonant. So picture books, I think, like the ones that I really remember, I mean, Eloise obviously had a big impact on me growing up. I'd say some of the visual, like pictures, books that I really remember now when I see them in the library or when I read them to my kids, like A Very Snowy Day is a really gorgeous book that's very spare in its words, but the illustrations are very striking, just this little child making footsteps across this great white barren field of snow. There's so many. They were like friends, that just I see them, certain books, I remember moments when I was in school, I just read my son Streganona. I don't know if you know that children's book. Streganona is a story about this little old lady in Italy who has this magic pot, and she makes pasta. And it's this really beautiful book about, listening and paying attention and not being greedy and not trying to impress people. And I really remember reading that very clearly in second or third grade. So, I think that there's a lot of nostalgia attached to books that live on. So for me, those four books, those are just books out of a spectrum of a million books that I remember being, that have resonance for me now. When I started to read on my own, certainly, Ramon, Beezus and Ramona, and a lot of the series is that my daughter is still reading, Amelia Bedelia. Those were also really just fun friends for when you first learned to read.
What fascinates you about children's book?
I think they have to be, kids are not foolish. They know when something is good. They know when something is funny. They know when something is beautiful. They're very pure in terms of as critics. So I think that you have to really hold everything to a very high standard. You have to make it really funny. You have to make it really good. You have to make it look really nice. Like, you can't dumb things down for kids. They're very bright, and they know what's up. They know, they know when something is good. So I'd say really just make things as high quality as possible for them, because they deserve it, and they know what's good and what's not.
You write a whole lot, so do you find yourself expressing your thoughts, or rather you just write to entertain others?
Both. I write a lot for myself, like some of the stuff that I write. I have a blog that I write on, and a lot of that stuff is for myself to process some of the things that I'm going through. Like if I'm writing stuff about, my parents, or about being a parent, or about, different funny experiences that happen, I like to work through things that are happening by kind of writing about it and coming up with something that is hopefully a bit of a document for that moment, so I can look back on it and see how I got somewhere from place point A to point B. And, I share that stuff sometimes with people. I've had some of those pieces, published online on a couple of other parenting blogs and stuff like that. But in general, a lot of the essays that I've been writing, lately, like in the last year or something, were just stuff I was writing for myself and trying to kind of And sharing with people I know, my friends. Mm-hmm. And if other people mm-hmm. read them and liked them and shared them, that was cool too. But it wasn't exactly like I was trying to get everyone to look at that stuff, because that stuff is kind of a little more personal to me. So if
sure.
people read it and it helped them, then that was great. But it wasn't like I was out there really pushing for people to, for all kinds of people to read it.
I see.
Does that make sense? I mean, you know, some of the subject matter was, you know, I lost my mom, so I was writing a lot about that. It's not necessarily stuff that I would demand other people read, but if it helped mm-hmm. them and meant something to them, then that would be, that's great. That's lovely.
I sense that you have the opportunity to use your writing, and in this case, what I consider as journaling, an opportunity for you to express yourself and help you through expressing your thoughts on a daily basis, and as well as is a wonderful self-therapy in a way.
I agree. I wish I wrote every day, honestly. I don't really I wish I had the, you know, discipline to really
yeah.
do that, but the truth of the matter is I don't write every day. I don't journal every day. When I was really in a good place where I was writing a lot last year of essays,
yeah.
it was great when I could get, like, I would work on one for a while. So they were mm-hmm. between journaling and something polished. It was a kind of like some like a mm-hmm. hybrid of that.
Sure.
I do think that is a very useful thing to do, to write every day, to sit down, to really always be working on something. And I try my best, but it doesn't always work that I can be working every single day, just because I have this other job, and also I'm just not always able to sit down and focus. But that's like a goal, is to be able to work mm-hmm. every day. And mm-hmm. I do think journaling helps. I just like to make things a little more, I like to whittle away at it a little more so that it's not quite so raw. You know what I mean? It's
sure.
like somewhere between a finished essay that you'd really want to share with the world and something that is just something you're kind of just getting out of you. So I hope it's more of the latter. But if I was really going to try to publish any of those or share them in a real way, I think I'd probably, you know, even give them a little more polish.
Do you catch yourself daydreaming a whole lot?
Interesting. I don't know if I... probably... I mean, my mind certainly wanders,
mm-hmm.
and I think probably not enough. I think probably mm-hmm. that's probably a good goal, is to dream a little more, because that's where you kind of really come up with stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I find myself, like, you know, either thinking about things I need to do, or... you know, I do meditate, and I try to be present. So I don't know.
Yeah.
It's not quite the same thing as daydreaming, because daydreaming is really unstructured and pretty loose. And I think meditation is a little more, you know, a framework to try to
yeah.
rein in some of that mind. But I do see the benefit of it. Unfortunately, again, it's like sitting down to write, like daydreaming. It would be nice to have, like, you know, you're 3 hours in the morning to write, and then you're like hour
yeah.
in the afternoon to daydream. But I daydream when I kind of am moving around, like, because I take the subway a lot. You
mm-hmm.
know, I take the subway to go to auditions and jobs. I, you know, when I'm doing that and when I'm walking, I do. But, yeah, it's usually in when I'm moving, I'd say.
It's not a structured daydreaming period, but at the same time, that's probably when you're most creative, in the sense that letting your mind wander around and you're using your meditation period to kind of get back in the zone of the present moment.
Yeah. I try to focus when I'm meditating, like just on
yeah.
just nothing, on breathing. And I think that's,
yeah.
But again, you know, I would say, like, I do have a really active
mm-hmm.
you know, and I have an active life. I have an active mind. I've got a lot of things. I've got a lot of, I always say that I always, like, I have a lot of tabs open. You know what I mean? Like, it's like on my computer. If you look at my computer, it's really chaotic. And my husband is always laughing at me. And it's like, what are all these things open? What are all these tabs? You know?
Yeah,
but that
yeah.
I think is really emblematic of a little bit of my mind. I, you know,
mm-hmm.
I can get some stuff done, but yeah, but sometimes it takes, you know, closing a lot of the tabs to get there, because it,
mm-hmm.
you know, a lot of things get open during the day. Or, but dreaming is good. I wish to, desire to have more of that in my life. You know, I think it's really useful.
Interesting. How did you end up becoming a voiceover actor?
So when I was working in book publishing, one of the things I worked on, I worked for Penguin for a little while, and I worked in their, I was a publicist, but I also was in charge of publicizing the Penguin audio series, which is kind of a really respected, remember, this is like pre-internet, you know, pre-downloadable books online. It was just starting, so you could go into a bookstore and you wanted to buy a book on tape, you could buy a book on tape, or you could buy a CD on tape, and then it sort of evolved in the last, you know, 10 years, I'd say, or 15, into being able to buy books online and listen to everything online. So at the time, it was like still a relatively, you know, new thing, but the people that did it, the actors that did it, were really great, and some of the readers, the listeners who had, like, they loved certain voice actors, you know, they loved them, they were crazy about them, it would, like, sell an audiobook. And they weren't all famous actors, some of them were just, you know, working actors who were really amazing at reading. So it just got really interested in that. I thought it was so interesting that, you know, narrator was so important to the experience of how people were hearing books. And I started doing a little bit of that for New York Public Library had, like, a division for the blind. So I started to read some books on tape. I wanted to get good at it. And I thought I had a voice that sounded like some voices I had heard, you know, narrating things. And then I had a couple of friends who knew people who did voiceovers for commercials. And so I just started paying attention to that, listening to what people sounded like. And at the time, a lot of people sounded like me because there was a lot of, like, women who sounded like had sort of scratchy voices, and that was sort of a big deal that was happening. So I started pursuing it. I took a class in a recording studio with a guy who did voiceovers and was the coach. And I just sort of started to, you know, figure out how it worked and wanted to get into it. So I started to do that as I was still, like, thinking about what my next move was. And I ended up, you know, making like a demo tape and working at the library a little bit on my narration stuff. And then I got an agent to represent me, a talent agent. So once I had the talent agent, like, you know, kind of vote of confidence, I decided that I was going to pursue that and continue to work and do some, like, stuff on the side, like PR work and, like, freelance. But I wanted to pursue the voiceover thing. And so you needed to be kind of, like, available. That was the whole thing. It's like being an actor. So basically you have an agent and they send you out on auditions and you have to be available during the day. You can't really have a real full-time job that you can't leave at the last minute if you get something. So I found a situation that enabled me to do a lot of my, you know, work from home and work from my friend's office. She became my friend, this woman who I work for. And I started, you know, to do voiceovers. I started working. So that was kind of lucky, I think, because it's a very competitive industry, especially now. It's gotten a lot more competitive since when I was doing it, and it was really lucky, and it's really fun. It's a fun world because, you know, you get to meet lots of people and get to kind of be in a lot of different places and run around and meet lots of interesting, you know, everybody's really eccentric, all these, like, actors and people that work in recording studios and casting people and agents, and it's a funny world, so it's great. I got into it because I was interested in it, and I pursued it pretty actively and got lucky, I think, and was able to do it. So it's been really fun and has, like, let me, because, you know, it's doesn't take up all of my day. It's very random. You know, I never know what my day is going to look like until even, like, the day of. I actually just got something now that I have to go do. So you really do have to have a little bit of openness in your life. So it can work really well. You can end up doing well with it, but you need to be able to always be ready to go. Like, you need to either have a recording studio in your house, or you need to be able to get to these casting offices pretty quickly so that you can be there and have the opportunity to get these jobs. So that's kind of the deal. And so it's a good fit if you want to also be have another creative pursuit that is a little flexible, like if you want to be a writer. Mm-hmm. So it can work pretty well. So that's, you know, working well for me at the moment. But, again, these are all, you know, hard things that you still have to figure out how to do them, right? You know, it's like you got to do it. So
very interesting. Why did you decide to write for children?
I basically had an idea that I felt was a children's book idea that felt like a good idea. So I'd say it wasn't necessarily that, because I actually think that Ella is it is a book for children, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But I do think that adults also really like it, and I wrote it for adults too, because adults are the ones reading books to children generally until they can read themselves. But my book is more of a picture book, so I'd say the age range is more, you know, 4 to 8. And then if you're an 8-year-old, you can read it to yourself. Like, my daughter's 8, and her friends love it because they you know, they think they inspired it. You know, they're really funny. They all think that they're in it, you know. So I don't know if that I definitely at the initially started out thinking I'm going to write this for kids. I think I had the idea, and then it felt like, how would this be? Is this a parody that would be more relevant for adults who read this growing up and now know it? Or is there a way to make this work in a way that it's a modern parody and it's a retelling and that it is still fun and relevant for kids, but adults will like it too if they knew Eloise and liked it, because it touches on all of the cadences of Eloise, the look of Eloise, and it's sort of it's making fun of our culture now and how we are so kind of different from what people were doing in the 1950s, even in these extreme situations, which are not regular situations for a child to live in a hotel without her parents and with a nanny. That's unusual. But in that kind of an extreme example of a story, you still have some funny ways to, I think, put our current culture under a microscope and laugh at it. So I hope that the book is kind of works on both levels. I hope it works for kids to enjoy, and I hope it works for adults to enjoy, because there's a lot of stuff in there that adults can laugh at, and they can laugh at themselves. So that's my hope.
Interesting. Did you do a lot of research prior to writing the book?
I did a lot of research to, I wrote a lot from my own experience of what kind of I see, you know, where I live, because, you know, the book is sort of like, it's based in Brooklyn where I live, and it's based on this hotel that I spent some time at, you know, I went to for my birthday, that is, you know, really, you know, groovy and cool and hip, and I thought it would just be so funny if a kid was there, because it's just not really sort of a place that a kid would be. In the same way, I think, like, in the 50s, you know, children really weren't at the Plaza, you know, in New York.
Right.
It was really a very grand and sort of beautiful, fancy place. And so the idea that, like, a child would live there or be there just is very sort of, you know, not nonsensical, but just a funny kind of a funny situation. And this, I sort of felt the same. It was, it's just this very groovy kind of cool hotel in this really groovy neighborhood in Brooklyn in Williamsburg. And, you know, there are kids, of course there's kids and families there, but in general, it's much more of like a young people's place where cool people hang out. And, you know, I just had the idea because it seemed like it would be really funny if there was a kid there. And my daughter actually had really wanted to come to the hotel with us because it was my birthday. We were, you know, going to get a night away, and she was begging to come because I think she was really obsessed with hotels because she had read Eloise so many times. I don't think she'd ever stayed in a hotel. And she really wanted to come, and, you know, we were like, you know, you're not going to come. We're going to get, you know, a night away from you guys. And then, and then when we were there, I thought, God, it would be really funny if she was here, because, you know, she'd be like scootering around and being funny and like breaking things and messing this beautifully, perfectly calibrated, cool place up. And that's when I had the idea. Oh, well, you know, if Eloise was here, you know, if Eloise was alive and, you know, this was in 2012. If Eloise was alive in 2012, 2013, she would be living here at this hotel, not at the Plaza. The Plaza's now gone condo. It's all owned by, you know, people from other countries. It's not like a hotel anymore. It's just not the same. But she'd be living in Brooklyn. And so that's why I had the idea. So then research-wise, I mean, I just basically wrote the book from my own mind and just some of the things I see and some of the funny things I wanted to poke fun of. And, you know, of course, I did a lot of research about the original book and about, you know, thinking about what was happening then and what that same situation would be now. And, of course, Marcos, you know, the illustrator, Marcos did quite a lot of, you know, he went to to different hotels and looked at people. And his illustrations are very, they're very active. They are very much about like people moving and walking and like fashion and how they wear clothes. And so he, you know, he did so much looking around. He's also a Brooklyn guy, so we both live here and we both really like the way the energy of the place that we live. So I think hopefully also that's something that you can see in the book. It's like a real we love, you know, it's a love letter, you know, it's a love letter both as an homage to Eloise, and it's a love letter to Brooklyn where we live. Although it doesn't technically say that Ella lives in Brooklyn, but I think Marcus and I both feel that she does. But she could live either. You know, there's a lot of places it could be. It could be a lot of, you know, Portland or San Francisco or Los Angeles or, you know, Miami. There's a lot of cities that it could be often. So, but I think that, you know, I know a lot more about children's books now and a lot more about books that I want to write for children than I did before. It sort of opened me up to a lot of things. So that's really exciting.
Very interesting. How did you end up teaming up with Marcos, by the way? He did an excellent job with the illustration.
Thank you. Well, I got really, really lucky again because the publisher chose him. You know, they chose him. And it was actually really interesting because I didn't know very much about how any of this worked. So when I sold the book, I started obviously looking around and thinking, well, who would be the right person for this? Mm-hmm. Although the publisher tends to be the person that gets to choose, they do give you some say in making suggestions in terms of people that you think might be good. But, of course, because they're much more venerable than I am, I've never done this before, they know a lot more and they know who to get and how to get them and all that stuff. So one day I was on the subway and I saw this really beautiful mural. The MTA, which is the, you know, the people that run our trains and subways and all the commuter trains, they did like a 100th or 150th, I can't remember which, anniversary mural of Grand Central Station. And it was illustrated by Marcus. And it was just this beautiful image of people walking through Grand Central. Have you ever been to Grand Central Station in New York City?
Yes, it's been a while.
So, you know, it's really gorgeous. It's marble, and there's that beautiful sky that's painted, you know, that beautiful green, and ceilings are super high. And anyway, he did this beautiful mural of people walking, holding shopping bags. Some of them are wearing hats that look like the cornices and the pieces of marble. It's kind of surreal looking, but it's basically this gorgeous image of people in, you know, New Yorkers walking through Grand Central proudly, kind of just doing their thing, commuting. And when I saw that, I was like, God, that is so cool, and it's so alive, and that's exactly who should illustrate my book. And so I wrote it down in my phone, and then I went home and I Googled him, and I was like, wow, that guy's amazing. And then like a couple weeks later, they came to me and they were like, we're using this amazing illustrator, Marcus Chin. We think we got him. And I was like, that is so cool. You know what I mean? Because I had seen his work. I had noted it. And then they picked him. It was pretty great. So at that point, I was really thrilled because I felt like I knew that it was going to be a really good journey for the book. I thought, like, they really, we want the same things. You know, we want it to be a certain same kind of thing. So, and then, you know, once he was able to get started with my text, he really did his own interpretation of it. I mean, you know, they really want an illustrator to be free to not have a lot of, I think, outside influence beyond the writing. So he really worked with the text and really created a world from it. And then when he had something to show, I was able to, you know, look at what he did and make suggestions. But really, he came up with what she looked like. He came up with, you know, what everyone looked like in general. And certainly I was able, like I said, I was able to make some suggestions and I had a say in the matter. But he really created her world from my text, which is cool because we didn't know each other and I didn't really tell him anything. And he just made this really amazing he had this really amazing interpretation of it. And so since then, we're totally buds, and we have been promoting the book together and hanging out, and I think he's great. I really admire him, and he is so He's just very talented, and he's really has so many interests, and he brings them all to his work, and his work is really happy, and it's really colorful, and it's really like exuberant,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
so I'm thrilled with him and his Ella's world, I should say.
Well, Ella certainly presents the beautiful synergy of creativity that you guys have for this project.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, so I think when you look at that, and I'm glad you explained in detail on how that synergy took place. Did your experience as a voiceover artist contribute to the dialogues in the book?
Oh, that's interesting. I would say, well, I did get to read the book. I read the audiobook, which was really fun. So reading it aloud, I think, is helpful to be have experience as a reader and an
mm-hmm.
actor. But the dialogue, I would say, mostly comes from more of how I hear people talk than being... Because, you know, when you do voiceover work, it's all written scripts. You know, you're reading...
Right.
You're reading, you know, copy for a commercial. You're reading, you know, narration for a book on tape or a documentary. You're reading a promo for, you know, a show or a network.
Mm-hmm.
You're doing, you know, a radio commercial where you're being, you know, a wife or a mom or something like that. So I think I could, I'm sure a lot of the stuff I hear informs how I write. But I'd say it's more about, like, stuff my kids say or, you know, stuff that people say that I hear, overhear dialogue, people talking, or, you know, just from my own imagination in terms of people I see on the subway or something, and I, you know, make an assumption about what
right.
their story is or what their deal is. You know, like, I'd say it's maybe the dialogue comes more from, like, being a little bit of, like, a snoop, you know, rather than than from like, the voiceover
mm-hmm.
stuff. But definitely, I mean, the voiceover stuff is very... It's very social, you know, you're always talking
mm-hmm.
to people when you're in auditions. A lot of them, you know because you've been working with them for a long, long time, and everyone's really talky and kind of fun. So it's a very mm-hmm. vibrant environment. So certainly, like, hopefully the book reflects, like, you know, a fun, vibrant environment where people are, you know,
mm-hmm.
talking a lot and active. Yeah.
I guess I'm alluding to as well, and you explain it in so many words in the sense that you have different characters, then obviously even in a voiceover situation, you are still playing a role.
Mm-hmm.
The interpretation of someone's creativity, and you kind of get into that moment of, like, okay, wow, how would this guy do this? How would that person do that?
Yeah, yeah, that's true. I hadn't really thought of that, but yeah, I think you're right that, you know, like, Ella's Manny, you know, he's like kind of... you know, he's a Manny, right? He's working as a babysitter for this little girl, but he's also got all these things that he's doing. You know, he plays the guitar, and he's in a band, and he's a filmmaker, and he, you know, he wants to, you know, open a food truck with some friends, and he's really into, like, making pickles and other things that a lot of people that, you know, live in these urban environments now are into because it's trendy and fun, you know? And so I do make fun of him, like, a little bit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, some of his dialogue is, like, a little bit, you know, it's not that he's pretentious necessarily, but he just likes to talk, you know, at Ella sometimes, and she then
mm-hmm.
parrots him, you know, because she doesn't have any friends that are kids, you know, she just hangs out with these adults who are all, you know, in their 20s, and they're all kind
mm-hmm.
of, you know, they speak like they're in their 20s. So I thought that was a fun kind of thing to just be able to, like, explore the relationship between, you know, he'll be, like, talking about, like, you know, Stanley Kubrick, you know, she doesn't
mm-hmm.
really know. That's too sophisticated for a six-year-old, but she still hears him. So she'll talk about,
right.
oh yeah, Stanley Kubrick, you know, and oh, Martin Scorsese, you know, yeah. I mean, because
mm-hmm.
that's the world she's in. She's in a world where people are talking about these things. She's, you know, she's a kid in an adult world. All her friends are adults. All the people she hangs out with are adults. So, you know, what's that like? That's kind of a funny thing. And so, yeah, I tried to do that, like, with his voices a little bit. You know, he's always kind of, like, lecturing her a little bit and in a way that's kind of, I think, funny. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah, I mean, that's a character that somebody me that created that dialogue and something he would say. So, yeah, I guess it does come from that kind of role-playing.
Sure. Is storytelling difficult work?
It can be, yeah. I mean, I think, you know, sometimes just getting to the heart of it is hard. Figuring out what you want to say, taking somebody on a journey, yeah, it's pretty hard.
I mean,
it's really cool, but it's hard. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's not. Doesn't always happen so easily.
I would imagine it's difficult in the sense of looking through the eyes of a six-year-old, looking at the world, and trying to make sense of it.
Exactly. Yeah, she is definitely trying to do that. And she has a lot of fun. You know, she has, like, a pretty cool life. Mm-hmm. But, you know, she's also, I think there's a little bit of loneliness in it because she does miss her mother. And I think she probably does kind of crave that contact. So, yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, she's just trying to figure it out. And that's what kids are always doing. I mean, I think that's what we're all always doing. I think we all kind of, if you kind of, like, you know, cut away at it, we're all just still trying to figure out what's going on. Like, what is happening? Am I okay? Am I all right? You know, it's just like, I don't think there's anything that ever goes beyond that, even though we're adults and we have responsibilities and we are, you know, important and we have stuff to do. I still think that is the kind of at the core is just, you know, we're just looking up at the stars. We're just trying to figure out what's happening. We're just like, why are we here? What's happening? What is this all about? You know, so I think when you can figure out how to distill something that's pretty sort of big in a simple way, that I think is the most successful storytelling. So yeah, in some ways, is it easier to tell a story for children? So in some ways, certainly it's not. I've never tried to write a novel, but I mean that seems pretty complicated and hard. Children's books are probably easier to write than novels, but a good story is not easy ever. You just have to find it, but it's out there. There's a lot of voices. There's a lot of stories, but I think it's not always easy to find.
Is there an underlying theme, a lesson learned in some ways, that you're trying to relate through the experience that Ella is going through?
I mean, for me, I think that, you know, there's something about, again, like there's something about looking out. I didn't grow up in a city. I grew up in a house. So, you know, you're in your house and you can look out and you can see other people in their houses, you know, going to sleep or whatever, when you're a kid trying to go to bed. I feel like there's something to me that's very comforting about the idea that, you know, everyone eventually, you know, goes to sleep every night. You know, they go to sleep. Mm-hmm. They have to eventually. Maybe some people only sleep a couple hours. But, you know, it's like eventually your body needs to rest. And
right.
That comforts me a great deal. I'm not sure why, but it always has. It always has made me feel like, you know, we're all going to sleep. It's all going to happen. And then we're going to wake up and it's going to be another day. I mean, that's just the way that life is. So I would say that's something that I was thinking about with her, because I think she is sad. I think she is missing her mom, you know, towards the end of the book. And I think she is feeling a little kind of out of sorts, and kids do. And how do you, you know, explain to them that, you know, it's going to be fine. We're all going to go to sleep and we're all going to wake up and that's going to be another day. I mean, and that's kind of, you want to tell them that. They don't always hear that. But then if they can internalize that themselves, I think that's truly how you kind of become your own, you know. You become your own, you can stand on your own. You can help yourself get through things. You know what I mean? Because I do think it's about having some it's not self-awareness, but just being able to have a sense of self so that you can feel confident and comfortable in your life. So
you're able to express yourself.
Yeah, like, or just be able to feel like you're there for yourself in this way, without it being sad or without it being lonely, but just it being kind of like a nice, a confidence-building thing where you kind of always know that you're going to be able to take care of yourself. I mean, it's kind of sounds harsh because she's 6 years old. I'm not saying, you know, hey, kid, like, figure it out. You're on your own. But just to have the knowledge that you're okay and that you're going to be okay, and that, you know, it, you're at once, you're small and insignificant, but it's also you're the person that is inside of your head. You live with yourself. That's what you got. So I think that would probably be, you know, it's kind of a big, yeah, it's kind of a big thing. But I think it just, Ellen knowing that, you know, she's standing out looking at the stars and she's looking out over the city and she can see all these windows and all these people in their windows. And, you know, just the idea that, like, we're insignificant, you know, but we are also, you know, the most important thing in the world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Is Ella allowing your inner child to come out and play?
Oh, yeah. That's really fun. I mean, I'd say it's definitely reconnecting me with her. And a lot of that is due to, you know, my own kids, like I said.
Yeah.
You know, reconnecting with, like, a lot of the stuff I loved as a child and being able to indulge in some of those fun things with my kids in terms of, like, you know, making Valentine's with my daughter or, like, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. playing Legos with my son or any of that stuff. It does gets you back there to the idea of just being able to play and just, you know, having that be the most important thing you do that day is play. So, yeah, I'd say the kids are really the conduit, you know, and then they led to the book, and then the book helps me, you know, think about what kinds of other stories I want to tell and what other kinds of books I want to write and that kind of stuff. So it is really, it's really exciting. It's fun.
Very interesting. So what's the most rewarding experience about composing Ella?
Well, I guess the most rewarding thing is just, you know, being able to share. I mean, truthfully, because it's, like I said, it kind of came from my daughter. Like, it's cool mm-hmm. to be able to share it with her. And, you know, we did, like, a big event a few weeks ago, and her, you know, a lot of our friends came and a lot of her friends came. And I think it's just cool to be able to, you know, follow an idea from beginning to end. And I realized I was lucky. I don't think that always happens. You know, it's not like you just have an idea and automatically you get to write a book. I mean, it was lucky, and it was a lot of things were in place for in order for it to happen. It was a good idea, I guess, because it, not every idea has legs, you know. So I'd say it's nice to feel like something that I had an idea for actually, you know, got me somewhere. I feel like that was really exciting. That's really, like, pleasing. Beyond that, I guess just, you know, it's cool to get the opportunity to be able to do it. Just, like,
fantastic.
Fun. Yeah.
What would you like for the readers to gain from reading Ella?
I would say that we have to have fun as much as we can. We have to, like, take a bite out of life. We have to enjoy ourselves, and we have to laugh at ourselves. Mm-hmm. Because I think if you don't have, you know, that's coming from me as a person who wrote sort of, like, what I'm hoping is a funny book for people to read. That's me saying, you know, let's not get too crazy here. Like, life is difficult. There's a lot of tough stuff out there. You know, sometimes it's fun to just, you know, make fun of ourselves, laugh at who we are, laugh at who we've become, and just take a step back and just say, you know, let's lighten up here. that's my main goal, because I do think it's, you know, it just, life gets crazy, and you have to laugh. You have to laugh at the situations around you. You have to laugh at irony. You have to be able to, you know, mm-hmm. laugh at yourself, too. So I'd say have fun and have a sense of humor and you know, live your life like, you know, like you own the joint. You know, I mean, I think Ella, too, she's so young, she doesn't really have any self-consciousness. She just does whatever she wants to do, and she has a really active imagination, and, you know, hold on to those things. Those things are, you know, those help you in life, I think, to be able to have fun, laugh at yourself, and just take risks, and just not take risks exactly, but just, you know, kind of go for it and just have a fun time, and, you know, maybe be a little bit annoying, and maybe, like, you know, you know, like, be a little mischievous and you know, just, I don't know, make your own rules a little bit.
Where can someone go to buy your book, get more information about you, and keep up with your latest happenings?
Sure. Well, first of all, you can buy the book, I'm hoping, in a local bookstore. You know, we've been kind of I'm not everywhere, but I've been checking out, you know, what's happening in New York City. And, you know, you can get it at a Barnes & Noble. You can get it at, you know, if you have an independent bookstore that you love, you can ask them for it, ask them to order it if they don't have it. And also, of course, Amazon has it, and you can always buy anything on Amazon and get it, like, almost like, within minutes, which is crazy. But, you know, it happens, and that's, like, you know, a lot of people buy books that way. So, as far as me, I have a website. It's my name, MalloryKasdan.com. I also have a website for the book. It's called ellathebook.com, and I'm trying to get everything up there in terms of, like, if I'm doing events or some of the press I've gotten. I'm intending to get all of that stuff up on the website as soon as possible. And that's me. My website, MalloryKasdan.com, has, like, a lot of my voiceover work on there. It has a lot of stuff I've written on there. So that's a place that you can find me. And then the Ella the Book stuff is a little bit more, you know, about the book itself.
Sure. Do you see Ella becoming a series?
Oh, my goodness. I would love to. Sounds great to me. You can talk to the publisher for me. How's that?
That sounds good.
I think she could have a lot more adventures, you know. I do. I think she... you know, she's obviously got like the means to do whatever she wants to do in her life. She can, you know, her mom's got the money, her mom's got the friends with the private jets. You know, she could go live in another country. I could see her, you know, making a documentary about her life or being on a reality show. I mean, she has a lot of things that she could do, Ella. You know, because she's modern. She's multi-platform, you know, she's got her store online, she's got an Etsy shop, she's got a lot she can do. So I can see her doing a lot of different things. I could see her, you know, being alive in a lot of different ways.
That's fantastic. By the way, we're coming close to the end of the hour.
Okay.
Since our show is about people, family, and living life, would you like to share a recipe for living with our listeners this morning?
I'll say this. My mom loved, like, really wanted us to always be busy. She wanted us to always be challenging ourselves. She didn't like us sitting around. She would always make us go outside. So, we'd be sitting around, we'd want to watch TV, or we'd want to be sitting on the couch just being lazy. And she would always make us get up and go outside. And I feel similarly now that I have kids that, you know, there's a time to relax and a time to, like you say, daydream and a time to, like, let your mind go. But I also think that life is for living and you do need to get up and get out. You know, I think there's so much to see and so much to do and so many people to talk to. And, you know, I think you owe it to yourself to be out there in the world. You know, if you're that kind of person, if you're a person who feeds off of other people, feeds off of the energy of, like, being out and about, you have to figure out what makes you, you know, makes you feel happy and do that. I say that because not everybody is going to be the kind of person that wants to always be out and about interfacing with people. So respectfully, you know yourself, know your kids, and, you know, let them, you know, show you what kind of person they are and let them show you what they need. But always encourage them to try things. You know, and get off the couch. My mom just was into getting off the couch, and I appreciate that now because I think getting off the couch is good. But I also like the couch. Sometimes I like the couch. The couch can be a very nice place to be. So I would say get off the couch, but, you know when you need the couch.
Very interesting recipe for living. Well, Mallory, thank you for the wonderful recipe for living and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. It has been a pleasure hanging out with you this morning. Have a blessed day.
You too. Thank you so much. Take care.
Thank you. To all our listeners, thank you for being with us. Please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest will be Amy Newmark, the publisher and editor-in-chief for Chicken Soup for the Soul. Amy and I will be discussing their special edition, Food and Love. The book shares 101 stories celebrating special times with family and friends and recipes, too. For additional information about this show and future shows, please go to fmmktalkradio.com. Thank you for listening and have a blessed week. Bye-bye.